the four corners of Southern California, this is the Hot Seat and You're In It with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone I have as the first candidate for the 62nd Assembly District seat to call into the hot seat, Paul Corey. How are you, Mr. Corey? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into the hot seat.
I'm doing good, Max. Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
You're welcome. And this is the start of the Hot Seats Assembly Candidate Series. Assembly District 62 is the only race I will be interviewing candidates for prior to the midterm elections. I will be sticking to my election protocol for the Assembly Candidate Series. You can hear what it is by listening to my election interview notes. And I previously said Jim McDonnell will be the next guest to call into the hot seat. However, there was a last-minute scheduling change, so he will be calling into a later episode. That is the reason Mr. Corey is following Rudy Melendez. I have lots of questions for the candidates, not a lot of time, so without further ado, let's get started. Why do you want to represent the 62nd District in the California State Assembly?
Several reasons, Max. I'd say to start out, I'm not really happy with the direction our state's going in. I think there's a lot of areas that are really not getting the attention they need to be getting. Predominantly there, I'd talk education. I'm going to talk about transportation infrastructure. Even just being aware of where jobs are going to be in the next 10, 15 years. I really think these are big areas that we're really overlooking right now. And that's why I'm getting involved. I mean, I really think I have some ideas about where I think we need to be going. And my vision certainly tries to play in the fact that all these different areas are interlinked. And again, I think that we often just give that aspect of it very short shrift. So to answer your question quickly, I would say I don't like the direction we're going in. I think we have a lot of opportunities for change that we need to implement, and I think we also need somebody in place who has experience in a variety of areas and isn't coming in as a politician. So I think that that's one of the problems that we've been having in the past, is that we certainly do see a lot of politicians coming in and trying to stay in, and their focus is on the shorter-term cycle as opposed to the long-term where I think it needs to be.
And you talk about your vision, and for purposes of clarification, what is your vision?
Well, a couple of pieces to it. I'd say primarily, let me just give you a quick heads up on who I am. I'm a former high school teacher in Los Angeles. I am an Army veteran, and I'm currently a businessman working in the aerospace sector. And I talk about my vision because it certainly pulls from all three areas and my experiences throughout my life. I graduated from West Point back in the 80s, went into the service, and as a platoon leader, I certainly was able to learn a lot in terms of what it means to serve and also what it means to understand kind of how pieces fit together. And that was certainly reinforced when I was teaching.
Mr. Corey, you're getting ahead of yourself with the background. We'll get into the background in the next question, but just if you could explain your vision without giving the background.
Okay, great. So my vision is basically this. We aren't going towards a state that's going to have the infrastructure and the people aligned with where jobs will be in the future. And part of that is the idea that, again, everything is interrelated. You talk about schools, you're talking about the economy. You're talking about our ability to fund our very underfunded pension plans, whether you're talking the city of L.A. or the state, California. But I think, again, it all kind of feeds into this idea that you want to make sure that our state is competitive, that we continue to attract companies, we continue to attract entrepreneurs and jobs, and we're able to grow. So it's education, it's infrastructure, and they're all interlinked. Does that make sense?
Yes. And okay. Why, I guess now we'll get into your background. What is your current occupation, and what have you done in the past that makes you believe you're qualified to serve in the legislature?
Sure. So my background, as I mentioned before, I'm a graduate of West Point. I was in the U.S. Army. During the Cold War, I had also been a high school teacher in Los Angeles and LAUSD, and I'm currently working in business development for an aerospace company in the Los Angeles area. But I do think that all my experiences, I mean, I'm able to draw from the fact that I have worked in the service, I have worked in the education sector, and I've worked in the corporate world, and I understand, again, why it's so important that we have, for instance, a strong education system, why we make sure that kids who are coming out of college are not overburdened by student debt loads, and how we make sure that all this kind of feeds into this idea that we need to be innovative in California. There's absolutely no guarantee that Apple will maintain its offices here in California in 20 years. What's to say they don't pick up and move to Texas or Vietnam or China. And the way we keep people here is by making sure that we're competitive. We have a smart workforce. So back to your original question, I think it's the idea that I understand how these pieces kind of interrelate and how a common vision will drive where legislation needs to be heading.
Okay. And for clarification purposes, you believe you're qualified because of your diverse background and you can pull skills from various parts of that background to make you a good legislator.
Absolutely. That's a great way to succinctly put it.
Okay. And why should 62nd District residents trust you?
I'm sorry, why should they what?
Why should they trust you?
Oh, well, I mean, again, I come in not as a politician. I mean, I'm not coming in with the agenda that I want to, number one, stay in office. I mean, I understand that we do have term limits for this position, but I think, and don't get me wrong, I'm in this to win it, and if I get elected, I want to get reelected, but the primary focus can't be that, and I think that's one of the problems. So I come in not as a politician. I come in as somebody who wants to take the state where I think it needs to go. So as far as why they should trust me, I think my background, I think the fact that I come in with an idea about the state, and I think, you know, they should trust me because of this experience.
Okay.
One more step on that, though. I will say that it's also understanding what the problems are. I'm not saying that people don't understand who are in politics or in the legislature. Whether or not they understand it, they're not addressing it. Obviously, the first step is to figure out what is the problem, and I think I understand kind of what the problems are. And I, like I said before, I think my vision is going to address those problems.
Okay. And will you take campaign donations, I guess a two-part question, will you take campaign donations from special interest groups and or corporations, and will you ever meet with or be influenced by a lobbyist?
No and no. And that the reason I say that is because that goes counter to what my objectives are in the election. I think whenever you muddy decision-making processes with special interest money or lobbyist money, you get away from the core purpose of what the government should be doing. When you start looking at it more of a let's say, a microeconomic level, looking at a particular industry, you could be doing that to the benefit of that industry, but you're hurting the overall economy. That's why I'm not into accepting money from lobbyists or special interests.
Okay, and I do want to ask a follow-up question, and because of your background in the service, does that also go for companies that claim they will benefit the National Guard or do things for the National Guard, and that fellow, and if you have a fellow veteran who comes up as a lobbyist and wants to meet with you, does that mean you'll say no to them as well?
Yeah, so here's the scoop there. My personal litmus test goes back to what I said before, Max. If it serves the greater good, if it serves the vision of where the state needs to go, then I will certainly talk on the military side as well. In California, we have a very unique situation just because we've had such a background of aerospace, historically speaking, over the last, you know, 80, 70 years. But that base has been eroding. So when you look at a military or an aerospace issue, I mean, I'm going to look at it just like I would look at any other issue, but I'm not going to look at it in terms of, hey, I need to give this more attention because I took money, because I'm not going to.
Okay. And if a resident was to come up to you and ask why he or she should vote for you, what would you say?
A couple things. Number one, I understand the dangers that we're looking at in our state. MIT did a study recently, and they came out and they said, you know what, in the next 15 years, 40 to 45% of jobs today are going to be eliminated by technology. And nobody is even discussing that fact. So I think you talk about credibility or how I'm trying to appeal on a grassroots level to individuals. That's part of it, that I can see that the problem is lurking, and we're not doing anything to address it. So I think it's, number one, it's understanding the issues. And number two, it's having a clear vision of what we need to do to address them. So I do think that the fact that I'm a veteran, the fact that I used to teach in the schools here in L.A., also add credence because, you know, it's a matter of serving the community, serving the country.
Okay.
It also helps build up credibility.
Okay. And if a resident was to come up to you and ask how you would improve the quality of life in AD 62, what would you say?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, quality of life means so many different things. I'd say right off the bat, there's two short-term issues that we're facing, and they're both related to, well, the big one is the drought. I think we're starting to see, or we're going to start seeing even more, increase in pricing for food. I think I've seen it go up 2 or 3% over the last 6 or 7 months, and it's going to get worse because you're not only seeing crop yields being reduced because of reduced water in the state, but you're also seeing the size of, for instance, fruits or vegetables are being reduced because they're just not getting the water that they were prior. So I think immediate action is needed on the to address the drought, not just currently, but also in the long term, because it's going to come back around. So I think that's one thing right there, is to try to, how do we make sure that food prices stay reasonable? I think on the other side, it's going to have to do with jobs in the short term and the medium term. And with regards to that, my goal is to work, introduce legislation, follow through, provide oversight to make sure that we are modernizing our infrastructure. We put a lot of money into the roads, but there's a lot of other things we need to do. I mean, yes, we need to keep building our road systems out. We need to continue to address the rail system. And once those come online, we're certainly going to have an improved quality of life because people aren't going to be spending as much time on the road.
Okay. And moving on now, but continuing along the same lines, if you are elected, what would be your priorities?
Education, infrastructure. Now, you asked what my priorities are. I mean, obviously, as I just mentioned, the drought has to be addressed immediately, and there are some short-term things and some longer-term things that we need to do, but we have to start. I mean, initially, what I would do on the drought piece is I would make sure that every business and home in California, and right now there's roughly 250,000 businesses and homes that don't have water meters on them, but they are required to have water meters installed immediately to regulate their water usage. We need to make sure that we repair faulty pipes because we are losing upwards of 10 to 15% of water just because it's leaking through faulty pipes. I think we need to introduce and innovate on the with regards to something like drip irrigation, just to make sure that we're smarter with our water usage. There's a lot of things other in addition to those, but the water needs to be addressed immediately. I think on the education front, immediately we need to get more teachers in schools. We have huge class sizes in some cases, and it's unfair to the teachers and it's unfair to the students. So I think that's the second step. The follow-on on that piece would be the implementation and execution of something called Common Core Curriculum, which is coming down the pipe. I just don't think it's going to be executed very well based on teachers I've spoken with in different districts in the area. And then the last piece, of course, is we've got to get the transportation grid. We got to keep improving it. I mean, I don't really understand in general what the long-term vision is for the transportation system. I mean, it just seems like we're very ad hoc, and I think the reality is that that's not going to address our problems.
Okay. I have two questions of clarification. One is, would you keep the governor's current, I guess, funding, school funding plan, would you keep that around? Because I know it had a lot of controversy. And then the second thing is, are you for or against the Common Core curriculum?
Yeah. Okay. The first question, I would keep his funding structure in place, but I would take a harder look at where the dollars are going. I think his proposal for this year, I want to say he's up close to $60 billion in education, which I think is great that we're able to put more money into the system this year. My concern, Max, is that we have seen a nice bump this year in terms of California revenue. Part of that was due to the introduction of some tax changes, and a lot of people wanted to, you know, cash out and sell investments in order to get the lower rate. So I think we're experiencing a bump right now. I don't know that we're going to maintain that. I also think, though, more needs to be put into the post-secondary. We're starting to look at our UCs and our Cal State systems. So we've got to get more funding in there. But I think he's on the right track, just to answer your question. I like the fact that we're putting more money in this year. But again, it matters how it's being spent. Now, to your second question about the Common Core, this is where my real concern comes up, because the money that's being put in for the budget to increase the K-12 spending is good, but I don't really understand what the plan is, and I can't really find out exactly how we're going to be executing the Common Core. In general, I like the Common Core curriculum. It's going to take kids in California where they need to go, because right now we're seeing the remnants of No Child Left Behind, and there's it's a lot more kind of knowledge-based, information-based. What Common Core does is it kind of takes kids up to the 21st century in terms of educational skills, which is going to prepare them more for the workforce.
So yes or no, are you for it or against it?
I am for it, but it does need to be tweaked.
Okay. And moving on now, the 62nd Assembly District is very diverse and includes different cities and different populations. What will you do to balance the wants and needs of the entire district rather than one portion of the district in terms of population and the cities that make up AD 62?
Good question. I think, we look at the jobs that are going to be created through building out transportation grid or making sure that we continue to modernize. It's going to make sure that those jobs are spread around. I think we need to also incentivize small businesses and entrepreneurs to start their businesses, and we can target. If the target is, hey, let's try to incentivize in the Inglewood, Gardena, Lawndale corridor, then I'm in favor of looking at what kind of tax incentives to help draw businesses there. So the jobs are going to be created for a modernization will help create jobs district-wide. I think the idea, in addition to that, is going to be to target specific areas as need be.
But in terms of actually balancing, say, if constituents in one part of the district want something and constituents in another part of the district want something, how are you going to balance that if they're two separate items?
I see what you're saying. Okay, that's a good question, and it's a difficult question. I think a lot of that is going to be trying to look at the grassroots piece, so engaging at the with the neighborhood councils, engaging with the local political party groups, figuring out where are we and what's the problem with this. If we're going to build a railroad station in Inglewood, what's the problem that the Inglewood residents have with something like that? I think also the message, Max, has to be disseminated correctly that the goal is not to unevenly grow this district, it's to evenly grow it. And concerns that a lot of people in one area may have might be very justified, but it might be based on the fact that they don't really understand the bigger picture. And that's where that grassroots piece will come in.
Okay. And what will you do to lessen or bridge the divide between El Segundo and its portion of the South Bay with the rest of the district?
Well, with regards to what?
Well, just because I know people that live in El Segundo that feel that ever since the redistricting happened, that they no longer have a say in the district because this El Segundo and the South Bay is only one small part, or they don't feel like they're involved or in the district really because it's so different, their part of the district so different from the rest of it. So what will you do to make El Segundo feel like it's part of the district and make sure that their opinions aren't drowned out and their South Bay, I guess, attitude and feeling, I apologize if that's not the right word, but aren't drowned out by the rest of the district north of the airport.
Right. I see. Okay. I think the airport and the El Segundo area, and I'm not going to clump everything together as if it's one monolithic piece, but you're right. El Segundo has some very unique parts to it. It does have a lot of business, aerospace, the oil refinery. How you try to match it with the rest of the district, I think, is, again, getting on the ground and spending time at the Rotary Clubs or at the neighborhood councils in El Segundo, meeting the people and trying to understand what is the heartache that they're experiencing, what is their, you know, why do they feel that being separated from the South Bay, as far as the district goes, is creating a problem for them, because it's a very vibrant area. They have a nice school district. Going back to Common Core, they're actually doing a lot on Common Core that I think LAUSD could take a learning page, you know, could learn a little bit from how they're implementing it. So the reality, again, I think it's just trying to understand what the core issues are that they're feeling and why they feel like there's this kind of separation between the rest of the district.
Okay. And for the record, I'm not saying that everyone feels that way. I just know some people that do feel that way. And I'd like to move on now to the airport. And the LAX is a big part of AD 62. Is there anything in particular you are planning to do concerning the airport?
Well, I think the biggest piece right now, as far as the airport goes, is moving people and cars around it. I think I know that there's a proposal on the table right now to move the railway line. I believe it's within a mile and a half of the airport. And the good news there is that then you have the people mover from the station to the airport. As far as the airport goes, I'm not in favor of extending the runway. I know that has been on the table. But what I am in favor of is making it more efficient in terms of moving people or vehicles in and through. The experience at LAX for travelers from L.A. or coming into L.A. is not great. It's a tough airport to navigate. That's why I think it's not just getting people from terminal to terminal, which I think that needs to be addressed with that, quote, people mover, but it's also how do we address the road situation around it? I think we need to have a smart grid in place to make sure traffic continues to move smoothly, and I think it's not just around the airport loop. It's also in the surrounding roads. The bigger picture with LAX, and going back to my other concerns, this is a big one because, I mean, if the goal is to either drive traffic to other cities for tourism, then, okay, let's not do anything because we're starting to see people who are going to New York or Orlando or other areas to spend their vacation dollars. That's a huge concern of mine because tourism is one of our biggest industries, especially here in Southern California. You got to make sure, and by you I mean we, and by we I mean me and everybody else in the legislature and at the local, county, and city level, in addition to the LA World Airports Authority, you want to make sure that the experience of people coming in is enjoyable. And that's why I'm so focused on moving people around quickly and efficiently, moving traffic in and around the airport, and making sure that people can get to, for instance, Disneyland in a quick way or get up to Hollywood. But right now, it's tough. So,
okay. And what are you going to do to help promote the airport and the area to make it a larger trade and travel hub for the Pacific region and the rest of the world?
Well, I think it's going to speak for itself. Once we improve the efficiency, I think that that's going to be something that, there's two pieces of that. I think internally, within the district, within the legislature, there has to be a very clear message of the importance, and make sure everybody understands this, of dollars coming in through or for tourism. Once everybody agrees that that's an important piece of our economy in California and Southern California, the next step is to make sure that we make the improvements that we need. The way you promote that is going to, again, be through travel agents or the local chambers of commerce or the city's budget, the state's budget, to make sure that everybody understands, hey, you know, this is California. Come visit. We're working to improve your experience. I mean, this is not going to end up being a marketing campaign, as far as I can see, at the state legislature level, but there might be those efforts from the airport, from the county, from the city, or the different cities in the state to try to bring people in. Because it's not, again, it's not just L.A. County. Dollars coming into San Diego or dollars coming into San Francisco from tourists benefits the entire state.
That is true. And moving on now, but staying on the airport, after last year's shooting at the airport, there have been calls to improve security around it. If you are elected, will you call or will you introduce legislation mandating greater security at airports, including LAX?
Yes, I will. But let's go back to what I said before about the people mover. I think what can happen is you want to get people through. It's a constant balancing act, Max. You've got to balance people getting through efficiently and quickly to get to their terminals, get on the planes and leave, and you got to balance the security piece of that. So, number one, yes, I would be in favor of improving security where needed, but I think that having an efficient people mover allows more places as people are in the airport moving around where security checks can be held, and they're not formal checks. But I do think even something like that where you have people within the building is going to help out in terms of monitoring.
Okay. And speaking along the same lines, do you support greater gun control measures?
That's a tricky one because you're seeing new technologies coming in that are allowing people to build weapons. So I like what we have in place in California. I don't, at this point, think we need to change anything. I think the regulations are good. But again, it's like most things, Max. You roll it out, and you don't know how well it's going to work until it gets rolled out. We've had some time to look at the gun legislation in California. I think there are tweaks that will be needed at some point down the road with these new technologies. But right now, I would not make any changes.
Okay. And as I previously mentioned, the coast is part of the district. What will you do to help protect and clean the beaches?
Well, I think a big part of that is just going to be drainage. I believe it's up in Seattle. They have a really good drainage system where they can monitor, for instance, oil flow, and they know when it hits the drains, and the monitors are able to pick up about where the toxins or the oil, whatever it is, was introduced into the sewage system, and they can go back and they can penalize and fine. And I mean, they're going to investigate, see who did it, and make sure that whoever was responsible pays for it, cleans it up, make sure it doesn't happen again. So I think that goes a long way. Once you start putting something like that in place, it's a big deterrent against people just allowing for raw sewage or toxins to be introduced into the coast. So I think that's the first part. Adjacent to that, though, is going to be this idea of the drought, where we need to make sure that we are capturing more rainwater. And I know when it does rain, when it rains, we certainly do have a huge outflow into the ocean. But we need to make sure that we have something put in place to help capture more of the water, make sure that it is clean, make sure that we can hang on to it and use it. So there's two separate issues there, but going back to your initial question about keeping the coast clean, I really do think more monitoring, more sensors, because remember, 21st century, the technology is out there, Max. I think it's just a matter of the political will to put these kinds of monitors in place. Because if somebody is polluting, we need to make sure we know who it is and make sure that they're held accountable.
Okay. And continuing along the same lines, and this is a yes or no question, do you support Senator Mitchell's proposed moratorium on fracking?
Yes.
Okay. And moving on now to other parts of the district, the eastern parts of the district, such as Inglewood and Hawthorne, may be forgotten because of the other areas in the district. How will you not forget about these cities, and what will you do for them and to help them?
Well, I think there's some, I think going back to the fracking issue, there's certainly been some interest to go into Inglewood and start doing some fracking efforts there. That's one of the reasons that I agree with that effort to put a moratorium on it. Going back to what I said before, though, ultimately the way you pull up a community, any community, is going to be through jobs, through trying to grow the middle class, regardless of what that definition is of middle class. And by making sure that the education there is producing smart people so that they have the opportunity.
Okay.
One of the problems, well, briefly, one of the problems people have when they get into politics, I think, is they want a pat answer that gives a solution, but it's complete fiction. The reality is that what you're asking, Max, is something that will take time. Now, unless we suddenly get $500 million from the state and federal coffers coming into Inglewood, I think it's education, it's a modernization and infrastructure issue, but again, it takes time, and it's incentivizing small businesses to come into those areas.
Okay, and how will you bring opportunity to this area? And in terms of what you just said, in the context of what incentives would you like to offer?
Right, well, I'll give you a great example, Max, and this is a huge missed opportunity. I don't really know how things went down, but if you recall, Boeing has a plant right now in Long Beach, and a lot of us in the district certainly benefit from it, directly or indirectly. That plant currently builds the C-17. It's a huge cargo plane. It's going to be closing, I think, in about a year and a half. It's going to be closing in a year and a half, I think. It's closing because the Air Force and international customers aren't buying anymore. We had an opportunity about 6 months ago. Boeing, on the commercial side, is going to be building their new 777 modernized aircraft. Well, California was one of the many areas, I think there are 8 or 10 areas.
I know where you're going with this, and I have to interrupt you because of the fact that it would have stayed in Seattle if the unions voted the way they did, and you can't change the unions that voted to stay in Seattle. So I know.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispel that, Max. I've got a bigger point, though. You're right about the union in Seattle. But my point is that I think there should have been a much more collective approach to trying to attract Boeing. The union, you're right, played a huge part up there in Renton or wherever they're building it, Everett. But the fact remains that our aerospace sector is continuing to erode. The F-18 we built a lot here in Redondo Beach at Northrop. That line's ending. What are we doing to replace these jobs? So your original question is, what do you do to bring in jobs? Well, I think we have to make sure that the aerospace, we have core sectors here. We have aerospace, we have agriculture, we have entertainment, technology. We need to make sure that we incentivize them, because once they're gone, and I don't know if you're aware, but you know, Rick Perry from Texas was just here, and he was all over the place mm-hmm. talking about how happy he was to pull all these companies from California into Texas. Well, that's a big problem, because once they're gone, it costs a lot of money to try to bring them back here. You have to give them such incentives to reattract them. So I'm just saying, I think we need to be a lot smarter, and we can't continue to play catch-up and be reactionary, like with the entertainment industry or with aerospace.
Okay, and just going back for a moment, I said Seattle. It is Everett and King County up there in Washington, yeah. Not Seattle. And just quick yes or no questions. Are you for or against? Are you for Proposition 41, and are you for Proposition 42?
I'm in favor of both.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, Mr. Corey, and thank you very much for calling into the Hot Seat. It was a pleasure. The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at MaxSchwartzTV.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking on the link on our page. Go to AmbergRadio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join me next time with 3rd District Board of Supervisors candidate John Duran.